Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA
106.5
FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Joining us in this round, I should introduce him, is Mark Jacobson, and he's the author of A Pale Horse. He wrote about Bill Cooper. Thanks for being here with us.
Oh, thanks a lot. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. Actually, I should introduce you. We all gab about this. I was just going to say, I love that Avianti called the porn lawyer, but yet the president's wife was in porns, right? So,
well, I mean, we're dealing with a kind of low bottom feeder kind of like universe here. You know, I mean, it makes sense that Donald Trump and Michael Avenatti would, like, you know, be dealing with each other, kind of. But, I don't know.
Same level. Hey, what was, when you wrote about Cooper, I was going to say, what was it about Cooper, do you think, that so many people followed him for? Like, why did they latch on to him? Because he's not the only conspiracy guy out there.
Well, I mean, he was, first of all, he was really kind of, there have been conspiracy guys forever. I mean, you know, on the radio as well. I mean, people don't remember this, of course, because they probably weren't alive, but there was a guy named Father Coughlin, name ring a bell. He was a Catholic priest, and he had a radio show once a week, and he had 90 million listeners. That's a lot of people. In the 1930s and 40s, and he was an American firster. And, like, you know, some of these kind of things are, you know, I'm not going to make a political judgment about his positions, but he was a kind of, like, American Nazi guy, and he had plenty of conspiracy theories about different groups that he didn't like. And so, you know, this is not anything that's new. But Bill Cooper, you know, a lot of it goes to the fact that Bill Cooper was just really kind of very inventive. I mean, there are plenty of conspiracy guys. I mean, at the time, even when he was doing it, there's a whole, I mean, do you include UFO stuff in conspiracy? I mean, I'm looking for the categories in which you're working
For sure. Because, well, you know, a lot of the conspiracies are aimed at even Kennedy, like with Cooper being going to release about the aliens being in control, and that whole theory came out. So, yeah, UFOs, aliens can be involved, totally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it depends on kind of what your definition of conspiracy is, in a way. But, I mean, Cooper covers the whole nine yards. He's covering the whole waterfront of conspiracies, what is now called conspiracy theory. from all the way from Kennedy, the UFOs. And through his career, he touched on secret societies, and, you know, there were all kinds of political different conspiracy things during the militia period, you know, whether or not Timothy McVeigh was responsible for blowing up the Oklahoma City Murrah building, federal building in Oklahoma City. You know, it just was, I mean, at a certain point, as we discussed this before, I mean, when you begin to lose trust in the official narrative, I mean, all bets are off, you know. You can, you know, that's why you're just saying, I mean, like, okay, so we've got the a guy who's like, has a very good chance of sitting on the Supreme Court, like one of the nine biggest, you know, most powerful justices in the entire country. I mean, there's only, people say there's only 32 NFL quarterbacks, and it's a really rare species, but there's only nine of these guys. That's even more rare. So, you know, so he's sitting there saying that, like, you know, this is the revenge of the Clintons, you know, which, you know, somebody might want to, you know, whether or not it's true or not, somebody might want to hear from Alex Jones or something like that, not from a guy who's, like, you know, going to be a Supreme Court justice who's going to be passing on the most important issues of the day, the real issues of the day. You know, so you've got this kind of thing where, like, it's not just the people on the radio or, you know, people that, you know, we used to, like, and you go into the truck stop, and there'd always be a guy outside who was screaming at the sky, and he had all kinds of ideas about, like, you know, the world's coming to an end and the kind of stuff like that. And, you know, you just sort of like, well, there's a guy who's screaming at the sky that the world is coming to an end. But now everybody does it. So, you know, it's become this kind of, like, more or less universal currency. And I think that that's one of the big reasons why the Democrats, for instance, are kind of doomed to lose all these elections, because they think that they're too smart or to take into consideration that people believe in all kinds of stuff. And your belief, how much you believe, I mean, it's hard to put a quantify that. You know, if you believe in one thing and I believe in another, does that make my belief better than yours? I mean, you know,
yeah.
I think it's a deep issue, and requires some kind of, like, I can see in the near future there might be some college courses, you know, Conspiracy 101, Conspiracy 201, 223.
I teach it already.
You teach it already?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, why don't they have that at Yale? That kind of, I mean, Yale is like where the Skull and Bones is from. They ought to know more about it than anybody. You know? I mean, I just find this stuff to be endlessly fascinating, you know, and I'm like a hard news. For 45 years, I was, you know, 40 years, I've been a hard news reporter for, you know, any magazine that you might want to mention, Rolling Stone and New York Magazine and National Geographic I work for. And this stuff, you know, this stuff that we're not supposed to pay attention to seems more interesting than what they claim is the facts, you know. So I've been sort of like, you know, ghettoized by my former colleagues. But I find it to be fascinating.
Well, I think it's fascinating, but it reminds me of the old National Enquirer days where it was bathroom reading, you know, space aliens,
yeah, well,
babies,
you know,
and all that.
Yeah, but I mean, how did the World Weekly News move from the thing that you read while you were standing on the line at the supermarket checkout counter to being something that people are actually discussing that might actually be, you know, that's really the truth, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, at what point does that move from the needle move to the point where, like, it's okay to think that anything bad that happens that requires money, if you're on the right, it must be George Soros, must be behind it, right? He's got more money than anybody who ever lived. You know? He's responsible for everything. I mean, you know, and then, of course, and then on the other side, it's the Clintons, you know. And this can't all be true. I mean, it just, nobody has enough hours in the day to be skullduggerous enough to come up with all these different things. So, but people seem to buy it, you know. So, I don't know. It's a subject for further research, no doubt about it.
So let me ask you,
Cooper,
in writing about Cooper, was he a true believer, and why do you think he got to that point?
Well, I think, well, I mean, I don't mean to say this in any way to besmirch the reputation of Bill Cooper, because I wrote a whole book about him, so I obviously think he's an interesting guy. But that said, I would say that there's a point in which the con man begins to believe his own con, if you know what I mean. You know, you say something long enough, and then you begin to actually believe it. I think with Bill Cooper, I mean, he's a very complicated guy, and he wasn't necessarily doing it for the money. So he's not saying this stuff just to get an audience. I mean, I think anything about the Constitution or the problems with America or that kind of stuff, he's like 100% believes all of that. And he's pretty sharp about that. And I agree with a lot of the stuff he says. You know, when he's saying that the driver of the car shot President Kennedy, I mean, I don't think that he believes this for a moment. You know, it's just a gimmick. It's like a way to sell stuff. But, you know, that's what made him interesting, because he's part P.T. Barnum and part like a real prophet of a sort. You know, so that's a kind of fascinating individual. Makes him a great American, as far as I can tell, because America is like, you know, there's a lot of mythology in America. John Wayne, do you think he really was a great guy when you look at it all? You know what? I mean, I don't think those Westerns would go over that well now.
Yeah. No.
That was one myth of the way the country was, and people believed it, and now they don't. So, you know, what are you going to do?
But it's starting to cross into science. I mean, it's starting to get where people, you know, the world's flat and we've never been to the moon. And
people really believe that? You think people really believe the world's flat? That's one of the things I'm always wondering about. Do you think they do? They really do?
Yeah. I've had them on the show. I had Mark Sargent, who runs it. He has a membership of over 100,000 people in the States, and the UK version has 300,000 people belong to it. So you've got almost 500,000 people believing the world.
How come nobody ever falls off? I don't get it.
Well,
I mean, why don't they just fall off?
Well, this is it. This is what I mean by they've kind of walked away, or they've turned their back to science. And it goes into anything, even global warming. Whatever people say about it, it's all political what they talk about. They're not talking about any of the evidence or facts, whether it's true or not. They talk about whether it's a conspiracy, it's Monsanto's, or it's you know, Bill Gates.
Yeah, there's always got to be somebody responsible. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and that's
always got to be somebody to point the finger at who's doing this. You know?
Yeah, and that's sort of disturbing. You know, I could. The first thing I saw this morning was that there's a picture going around with the Dr. Ford, the Kavanaugh accuser, her lawyer, coming out of Hillary Clinton's house drunk. And that's going around. And then, of course,
well, I mean,
it's not even a real
really,
picture.
If he really was, you know, well, I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things I worry about. I wonder about. I mean, when you say the world is flat, you know, I mean, does it start as some kind of like, I think it's, some of this stuff is it's like kind of a backlash against like what you learned in school. Like, you know, you felt that, they jammed all this stuff down your throat, you know, including the fact that the world was round, even though they have these pictures, you know, which I'm sure are all fake, of course.
Yeah, they're fake.
You know, from space showing this thing is round, right? So how can you, like, for instance, I'd like to ask you, Joe, you're a conspiracy guy, right?
Yes.
Well, which conspiracies, this is something I think about, wonder every so often. Not necessarily in regard to Bill Cooper, but which conspiracies do you think are the least interesting of the official conspiracies? I mean, like the ones that are just too dumb for words.
I mean, immediately coming to mind is the lizard people thing. So
yeah,
the idea
David
Icke stuff seems to go too far. Because he's got like 10 or 12 books written about this, where you have shape-shifting interdimensional lizards who rule the planet from a moon base and have been interbreeding with humans for years, and they control the royal family and every leader on the planet. It just doesn't, you know.
I mean, if I didn't know anything about David Icke and all this kind of stuff like that, and I heard that, I would just say that, well, that sounds like a science fiction book, right?
Yeah, but he...
So how is that different, you know?
But he, the thing with David Icke is he does very well for himself. I mean, he does these tours where he sells out and... You know, people see him for 12 hours, then at the end of the show, they come on stage with him and dance away the conspiracy. So, I mean, he's got hardcore believers out there. Not a lot, but they're convinced.
Well, like, for instance, I would say, from my point of view, I mean, some conspiracies that bother me are ones like, we didn't go to the moon. Like, that's a fairly standard, like, when you say you're a truther, I mean, that comes along with your... basic bailiwick, that you believe that we didn't really go to the moon. Now, I was trying to think about, like, you know, what is the reason that people think we didn't go to the moon? Now, you think about it, and for instance, there was a movie called Capricorn 1, which came out in early 1970s, not long after the supposed moon landing.
Right.
Had Elliot Gould in it, and it was about exactly that the moon landing was faked.
I think it had O.J. Simpson in it.
Yeah.
Did it have O.J. Simpson?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there are certain things called synchronicity, you know. Of course it had O.J. Simpson in it. But, you know, I mean, like, so I'm thinking that, like, there's that, you know. That was a very entertaining movie. I remember liking it quite a bit. And then there's also this kind of, like, more deeper and kind of... you know, kind of something that's worth thinking about a little bit. I think a lot of people think that human beings are really either stupid at their core, or, like, you know, they couldn't have gone to the moon. It must be fake. You know, but actually people are really kind of smart. And, you know, I figure, like, well, you know, if they could do stuff like, you know, invent language and, you know, do all these other things, why couldn't they go to the moon? It's just a technical thing. You just need to build a rocket and zoom over there, right? So what do you think about that?
Well, not a lot of people believe in the moon stuff. I mean, when we poll on it, it comes out about 5%. So it's as a conspiracy theory, it's you know, it's well known, but it doesn't have a lot of believers in the U.S. And I think part of it is because it's a point of national pride to believe that we landed on the moon. If you go to Europe and ask the question, I think it's almost 20% of people in France think we faked it. That makes sense.
Yeah, that doesn't. That, you know, those are the kind of things, like what you just said, are the kind of things I like to hear that kind of stuff, because, you know, some of this stuff is, like, it's just fun, you know, like, you ever hear of the writer named Ken Thomas? Spells his name with a... And he used to be the head of this thing called the Steam Shovel Press, and they put out a lot of books about this kind of... There was a guy named Jim Keith. Jim Keith wrote several of these books, and you can look them up. They're kind of really interesting. They're written in the 1990s, like contemporary with Bill Cooper. And they're kind of like, take a kind of longer view of conspiracy and stuff like that, which wasn't really codified to be called conspiracy at that time. It was more like, you know, different kinds of, like, because it came right out of the kind of left-wing stuff about the Kennedy assassination. I mean, the Kennedy assassination, most of the people who were so-called Kennedy researchers were all on the left, yeah, not on the right. I mean, the right-wing guys were the ones that were defending the official stories that, like, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone or something like that, because they were the people that believed in the government. And then somewhere along the way, things switched sides. And then that's an interesting point about when that happens. And I actually asked Paul Krasner, are you familiar with this person?
No.
Paul Krasner? Oh, Paul, you should look him up. He's a great guy. He started this magazine called The Realist in New York. And he was like, you know, he was one of the first guys to ever, take on this kind of material in a kind of modern way. But to get Ken Thomas, I mean, he was the guy that invented the term parapolitics. So in other words, it wasn't really conspiracy, it was just parapolitics. It was like more like a alternative narrative of what might have happened. But in any event, I wanted to know when these things would switch from the left to the right. You know, arguably speaking, you know, what we consider to be the left wing and the right wing. And I asked Krasner, and he said it was like when people, he said it was the Marshall Tucker Band. I said, what? He said, yeah, the Marshall Tucker Band. Remember them? They were these guys that were like, used to play Southern rock, like the Allman Brothers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, yeah, I'm following you. He says, well, when they people went to the Marshall Tucker Band, they used to smoke marijuana. I said, yeah. And he said, well, you know, everybody knows that marijuana makes you paranoid. You know, some people. So and once these kind of farm guys began smoking marijuana, they had a whole new aspect on things. And they began to doubt what they've been told in school, just the way we did. Mm. So, I'm not putting myself in one bag or the other at the moment. But, you know, so and that seemed to be a kind of interesting comment about conspiracy, that it kind of depends a little bit on what drugs you're taking. And, I think that's not something that people never talk about it, right? They just, but I mean, you wonder like why people believe these things that like, you know, you can't really understand like why would somebody believe that, you know, but, on the other hand, you know, I think conspiracy is very well grounded in a lot of ways because I mean, you know, on my Instagram post, I think that everybody should follow me on Instagram. It's called Pale Horse Rider Book. Just follow. Don't even ask any questions. Just do it. So like, you know, I there's a guy named John McCloy. John McCloy he was a CIA director. He's basically the inventor of the world, American Cold War world after World War II. He was a CIA director. He was the president of the World Bank. He was the head of the CFR. He was the top guy in the Trilateralist. I mean, he had the whole nine yards, this guy. Everything that people are suspicious of, he did. You know, he was the boss. And I figure, well, between Bill Cooper and this guy, I mean, I'd rather believe Bill Cooper any day. You know, because I know this guy's is a bad guy, you know. He's the one that's responsible for all kinds of horrible stuff, including putting the Japanese people in. He's the one that made the decision to put Japanese people in the internment camps out there in the West, where you guys are from. And also, he was against bombing the rail lines to Auschwitz when they knew that that's how the prisoners got there. He said it was like not had no war application, and he was in the OSS and you know the whole laundry list of this kind of stuff. So I mean you're not gonna and this is a guy that's basically establishing the reality of the kind of stuff that I grew up with because I'm like you know in this baby boomer generation. So I mean when I listen to something like that John McCloy or Alan Dulles or any of these kind of like gangster types, you know that. And later on, you know, the same kind of people were the guys that were in the Bush cabinet, like Rumsfeld and Richard Pearl and those kind of guys. I mean, I'm not going to believe them, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it becomes like sort of like, well, what else do you got? You know, this reality is not for me. I don't buy it. So what else do you got? And then, you know, when somebody like Bill Cooper, who's a very convincing guy, comes along and starts saying stuff like that. I mean, I think that, like, you know, you go like, yeah, I like that. You know, maybe I'm going to go with that, you know? And Cooper's right enough, you know, he's right enough to kind of work out his bona fides. I try to make it really clear in the book. I mean, in my book, it was Pale Horse Rider, available from Random House, Penguin Random House, on your local Amazon site. You know, it kept on coming up, like, you know, how do people come to this conclusion? What is it about this particular guy, the same question that you asked? I mean, what is it about this particular guy that made him catch on and I mean, he wasn't that popular. I mean, when he was alive, he's more popular now than he ever was. And it's kind of like I thought, he's a real American. I mean, he's got the American kind of, he's living through American history during the last third of the 20th century. He was in Vietnam. He did that. He was like, you know, he got PTSD in Vietnam. he was walking around with, like, you know, they put him in the VA twice. He was in the VA as an inpatient. He had all these wrecked marriages. I mean, he was just this kind of guy who was looking for some other way to be, because he couldn't, he obviously was having a hard time inside, living inside his own skin, because all this stuff kept happening to him. He lost his leg in a motorcycle accident. It's like, ask about Bill Cooper's veracity quotient. I would say that the thing he writes about in Behold the Pale Horse, about how he was run off the road by these guys, like Men in Black, and that's how he lost his leg, I would say that was probably not accurate. I could have been wearing, but I don't think that this really exactly happened. But, the reason why I say that is because, you know, I read the FBI report where his father said that it never happened. So, but everybody makes up their own story. I mean, it depends on how you feel about those kind of things. Is that a lie, or is that just sort of like, you know, a metaphor?
Yeah.
Which is a lot of things when you go in conspiracy theory. Is it a lie? Is it...
This sort of thing ain't my bag, baby.
You know, or is it a metaphor for the actual truth of the matter that you're never going to find out?
Yeah. Well, I think the problem now is that things are becoming manufactured. Like Bill Cooper would be able to say, this happened to me, and it might be an exaggeration, might not be realistic. But, you know, like today when I'm seeing posts of pictures of Hillary Clinton with this lawyer, it's been manufactured. And it's happening differently now. People are manufacturing these conspiracies.
Well, I think the answer in that is very simple. I mean, when Bill Cooper was coming up with his best stuff, I mean, not all his stuff is good, but some of his stuff is great. This machine called the computer didn't exist, at least as the internet didn't really exist. I mean, it was around, but, you know, you could send emails on it.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a T-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Stuff like that, or go on those bulletin boards with those long lines, if anybody remembers this.
Yeah.
The only way people would ever go on the internet is to go join these bulletin boards where you'd post this long, long stuff. And most of the first computer I ever had these little green letters on it, you know, and it was like, they were kind of like, they would kind of twinkle and stuff like that, so it gives you a real headache looking at this stuff. I mean, they didn't have pictures. They didn't have any of that stuff. So it's only after, really after 9/11, that you get into what it is now. You know, that's when it feels, that's when the kind of stuff that we're looking at now really begins to happen, because the technology was not available. And I think that has a lot to do with it.
So in 9/11, what was Cooper's thought on 9/11?
Well, Cooper, one of the things that he did, which has really made me admire his ability to be able to come up with alternative narrative, is Cooper was sitting there watching he was on the radio that day on a shortwave radio show called Hour of the Time. He was on for about 10 or 11 hours straight and just, you know, more or less calling the events. And what was the question again? Tell me again.
What did he think of 9/11? Like, I know, kind of know what he
said. Oh, what he did was, sorry about that. You know, when you get to be old, these things are anyway, but the thing that Cooper did, which was kind of incredible, I thought, was that he more or less came up with the whole dossier of the 9/11 as an inside job stuff in real time. He was sitting there going like this, those planes couldn't have brought down the building. I mean, everything that you see in Loose Change or any of those kind of things, basically Cooper mentioned them in real time while he was watching the event on television. And I think that this is really, he said there were definitely shaved charges attached to the buildings. You know, just whatever you want. He said, you can listen to that broadcast. It's really kind of illuminating about how this guy was somebody who could just kind of like talk this stuff, and it all made sense. Because if you were not going to believe that those planes brought down the building, there had to be some way to fell down. You know, I'm ruling out the hologram people at the moment. You know, I don't know that they're wrong, but I'm ruling them out for now. So, you know, at a certain point you begin, you know, like, and I think really the first time I really ever got into the new kind of conspiracy thing was I did a long piece for New York Magazine about 9/11 conspiracy, about the 9/11 truth movement, which had just begun in really 2004. It didn't start up immediately after the events. It didn't really get, like, you know, speed and kind of like gravitas until like 2 or 3 years later. Because I was at several of these meetings. I don't know if you know New York very well, but there's a place called the St. Mark's Church. It's one of the oldest buildings in New York City. And it's kind of a hallowed building, you know, in the sense that, like, you know, beatniks like Allen Ginsberg first read his poem Howl there and stuff like that. So this was the kind of place where people would gather if they had a big issue on their mind. And the guy who was the pastor of the church, or one of the pastors, a guy named Frank Morales, was somebody who had gone down to try to help the people who were, like, still covered with all the rubble. And a lot of people told him that that didn't happen the way they say. And he just believed that. So he started this group, and they came around with, you know, several of the, I mean, I guess anybody who's, like, you know, conversing with the 9/11 truth movement can just tell you that 5 or 6 things that most people believe that are ascribed to that point of view about what happened. And, you know, Bill Cooper had already spelled them all out in 2001, you know, 3 years before they actually reached the kind of popular critical mass in the popular culture. So in that way, he was very prophetic about a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, there's all kinds of prophecies, you know.
Yeah.
You know, some people are going to tell you tomorrow you're going to get hit by a car, you know, something, you know, it's like, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah, he sort of
he knew how people were going to think.
I think he was surprised because of the CNN report and the reporter being able to interview Osama bin Laden and nobody being able to find bin Laden. I think that was sort of...
Well, that's important for sure. That's important. But the idea of, like, if you go from... like, yeah, something big is going to, like what Cooper actually said, which was something big is going to happen, and they're going to blame it on Osama bin Laden. And if, and when they, when you hear that, don't ever believe it. That's the paraphrase of what he said, you know. And, but to go from that point of view to like all these different machinations of like how those, these were the tallest buildings in the world. They weren't like, you know, a couple of little bars that were down in the corner. I mean, they were huge. I mean, I live in New York City. I mean, like, you know, they, anytime you go across the Brooklyn Bridge there, they beat you. I mean, it was like massive. And to bring down those buildings, it could, you know, it's just, I mean, it's hard to even conceive that it really even happened to somebody who grew up with those buildings. I remember them building the building. So, and I was there the day that, the, you know, as a reporter, I went down there the very day that it happened, 9/11. So, you know, it was just this graphic thing and very powerful, emotional stuff. And to be able, the guy, and Cooper took it as a powerful, emotional thing, but yet he was able to come through with this kind of very concise, you know, dossier about how the they, whoever was responsible for it, had accomplished this. So I thought that's like kind of, I mean, it's just worth thinking about, you know. And I hate the liberals that put everybody, they just assume that this kind of, anybody thinks like that, they must be wrong, you know. They can't possibly be right. You know, there's no way in a million years that they can be right. So, and that's, I think those people are, you know, don't really get the credit for being as narrow-minded as some other people, you know. You know, yeah. So they all think that they're very liberal and they got a lot of, like, you know, they're open to all kinds of ideas, but that is not true. So, not any more than, like, you know, I had a big argument with one of these guys. Well, we eventually made up, I'm happy to say. There's a guy on Instagram. And, you know, I said that Bill Cooper, in my book, I say that Bill Cooper, I wish I had said Bill Cooper believed in aspects of evolution. But I didn't say that. I said he believed in evolution because in my analysis of his positions, he believed in evolution, at least he believed in some evolutionary theory, right? So the guy writes me a letter saying that...
Yeah, baby!
Because Bill Cooper was a believer in God and he couldn't possibly believe in evolution. So I wrote him back. I said, I believe in God and evolution. What's wrong with that? So, like, you know... You know, it was like sort of like, I think this is a false dichotomy, you know, and I think you should do what Bill Cooper would tell you to do. Do your research and figure out, like, whether or not you really believe this before you just parrot it. And, you know, he never came off that. I mean, he, to this day, he'll think I'm, like, lying about that. But he did read the book. I mean, it was kind of a very, it was the best thing that happened, really, in a way, the entire time since I published this book, because this guy was trashing me on the internet. And then I wrote him back, you know, like a maniac, and said, like, well, you mean, did you read the book? And he said, well, no. I said, I know you haven't read it because it's not even out yet. So, like, so I said, look, I'll send you a copy of the book. So I sent him a copy of the book, and we made a deal that he would read the book, and if he still felt it was full of shit, he would, you know, he could just throw it away. If he thought that it had some worth whatsoever, he would have to buy a copy for a friend of his. And he accepted this deal, and then he wrote back and said he really liked the book. And I felt like, wow, that was like, you know, it's better than a review in the New York Times. I mean, you know, it just kind of made me feel like that's what I wanted to do. That's what the book's about. You know, trying to figure out, like, why people think these things and just sort of talk about it as opposed to, like, saying, you know, George Soros is responsible, you know, the way things are. You know,
yeah. Well, you mentioned about how
thing, you know,
you mentioned a lot about how it's the most read book in prison, and why do you think that is?
Well, I think it has a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, I couldn't tell you 100%. What I think, what I would theorize about that, is that Bill Cooper was somebody who believed in the devil, and more or less. I think we discussed this before, but the thing is that he was looking for the reason why things don't work out very well, you know, and then he eventually went through the aliens from outer space and the secret societies and everything like that, and he came to this place where most people wind up coming to, if they're really thinking about that, the idea of the nature of existence of evil. Is there really a force in this world that that does evil stuff? And then, you know, and then what is the personification of that? Is the devil or whatever, you know, every culture has got their own devil. So it's true. There's always somebody. And you know, actually, we won't go into, but the African cultures are different that way a little bit. But so in any event, so like people in jail are always wondering, like, how the hell did I get here? I mean, like, you know, what happened? It, you know, yeah, okay, I might have hit that woman with a car, and then I was a hit and run driver or something like that. But it wasn't really, you know. And I don't mean this as a joke necessarily. It'd be hard to find people in jail that really think they're guilty, you know, in the larger sense of things. There's always some reason why they wound up there, and you know, society's unfair. I need money for my family, you know, the laws are unfair, whatever it is, you know, which are many of these things are legitimate, I think, because society is not really constructed in a fair way. So, you know, so, and Bill Cooper was like trying to think through the same problem. You know, he wasn't in jail. I mean, there's a reason why Alex Jones called his original program, I think it was called Prison Planet. I mean, there's a sense that the earth, and this is a typical standard conspiracy theory. I don't know, if you've heard this one, but I mean, the earth is a prison planet for some larger group of aliens, and it's sort of like Australia used to be, where they put all the prisoners there, you know. So, this idea of being incapacitated, you know, like incarcerated. Because people like Bill Cooper, I think he was like really felt that he was being incarcerated by the evil forces that were like attacking his life, and because I mean he wanted things to be a certain idealistic kind of way, and you know, God bless him, but you know, wasn't turning out that way for one reason or another, and you know, so you couldn't get a more close. I mean, here are people that are actually locked up, and most of them are locked up because they're. Most of the people in the prisons where this book began to get read were African Americans. I mean, it's just a fact. And then it became a thing which was, I write about in the book. It's really one of the best parts of the book, I think, where, you know, certain people, African Americans in jail, began to, a lot of them ascribed to this guy's theory of the 5% movement, which you can just look it up or something like that. But it's like, basically, this guy, Clarence 13X, decided that 100% of the people in the world, and 85% of them were the sheeple, like, you know, what Bill Cooper would call the sheeple. And, you know, like, they just go along whatever's happening. You know, they go to work at 9 o'clock and come home at 5 o'clock, and they live and they die according to the rules of the society. And then there were 10% of the people who were making the rules of the society, and these were what they called the bloodsuckers, right? But then there were 5% of the people, the poor righteous teachers, who were going to actually do something and change this world, you know, which is, you know, when you think about it, a lot of revolutionary movements are like that. They got the 5% of the people that really know what's going on, you know, and they're going to do something about it. And most of the early rappers were members of this group. Everybody from Tupac Shakur to Busta Rhymes, you know, Mobb Deep, and most specifically the Wu-Tang Clan, they were all 5%ers. So whether they've been in jail or not. And so they adopted this kind of feeling of like, you know, and the Cooper book became a text. It became a sort of, you know, you read this, and you find out, and the fact that Cooper was a big fat white guy who lived in Arizona, who worked in naval intelligence, made it even more true. You know, it made it even more like, why would he be saying that unless it was true? So, you know, then you got a situation where, like, I would say the people that most of my audience for reading this book are either right-leaning libertarians or hip-hop guys. I want to read it. You know, so, you know.
Well, it's the same thing.
I mean, Well, I don't know if it's the same thing, but there are definitely related, you know.
Well, that's Joe. That described him to the T.
Yeah.
Is that right, Joe?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you're a graffiti guy and all that kind of stuff?
I mean, the thing that you seem to be talking about, it's like the movie They Live by John Carpenter.
Oh, of course, man. I got to say, Bill Cooper was the first guy to pick up on that. I mean, I come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. I'm all out of bubblegum, right? You know, the Roddy Rowdy Piper line?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great movie. I mean, you know, that is really one of the great movies of the modern world. And John Carpenter has been not fully recognized for his finger on the pulse of what's really going on in this world. You know, people want to go to these Steven Spielberg movies, but it's really John Carpenter. He knows what's going on.
But it seems like something that's really ingrained in us, that there's this anti-elite sentiment that sometimes spins out of control and comes and gets expressed like in a They Live scenario. Like, oh, you know, they're elites. They're obviously blood-sucking aliens sucking the life out of us.
Well, I mean, you can't really, if your boss is the guy you hate, what is that going to do you? You know, what, are you going to kill him or something? I mean, you're not a serial killer. You're not going to shoot the guy. He's going to have to put up with it. And he's a prick, right? So, like, you know, why not? You know, the human mind is endlessly fertile in its ability to repress and kind of like, you know, make other kinds of associations. So why not these guys? That there's so many hilarious sequences in They Live. I think, you know, when he's just sort of like walking along, you know, and he puts his sunglasses on and he goes, what? But it's like, it's one of the great movies of to me. It's fantastic. It's like right there with 2001, you know?
Well, it's something to be said for this view that there's an alternative reality that we could only see if we either opened our mind or had the right sunglasses or whatnot.
Well, that's what I think about the drug. That's why I mentioned drugs. I mean, you know, if stoners have a different reality than non-stoners, they really do. I can tell you that from personal experience. That's one of these, this reality today is like pretty grim, it seems like. You know, you want to have a certain kind of scrim to be able to look through it so it makes some kind of sense to you. I mean, I think that's why those fundamentalist guys in the Middle East are like, what is the modern world going to offer them? Not much, I would say. You know, I'm not excusing the way they do these things. They're insane. But, you know, fundamentalism, at least if you follow the Quran or something like that, at least it makes sense to them. So why would you want to become like, you're going to put on a business suit and try to become just like an American? I mean, that doesn't seem so great. You got these different kinds of things where people, you know, they don't want to believe what is. You know, because it's, and they're kind of too lazy to do anything about it, not too lazy or too powerless to do anything about changing it because you don't really know what you want instead. And then, you know, you get to the point where you're trying to figure out, like, well, how did this happen? Just like those guys in prison who are wondering, how the hell did I get here, man? If I'd only taken that car instead of this car, you know, I mean, the cops wouldn't have caught me or whatever it is, you know. And then you know, I mean, I think that's what Bill Cooper is really... You know, he's really the guy who kind of, without really even 100% knowing it, I mean, he just was like ahead of his time. He was like ahead of the curve in this kind of thinking, which is the reason why he can come up with this stuff about 9/11 3 years before everybody else did. So, you know, I mean, there's still no proof that it wasn't the two planes. You know, there's all kinds of stuff you read on the internet, but there's no real proof. You know, there's no real proof that it happened the other way, you know? And so it's like you're basically arguing about things where people are never going to know the answer to. So, and that's fine, you know? I mean, you know, you got to talk about something. You know, you're a living, breathing human being. You got to talk about something. So, I don't know. I mean, I think...
Yeah, most of them sound like they'd be a good movie, that's all. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, most of them... Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so, you know,
I was just going to say your book, The Pale Horse Rider. Now that's available everywhere. It's out now.
Yeah, it's out of the bookstores, and they can get it online, different places.
And response to it? Have you had any feedback?
Yeah, I got some nice reviews. I got one guy who said I was a CIA shill. So I figured that was the best review I got. And I told Alan the other day, I mean, I said, if I'm working for the CIA, where's my check?
Yeah.
Where's my money? I want my money. So, you're going to get this. It's actually, the response has been kind of interesting because I really didn't know who was going to read this book, you know, if anybody. So, I'm feeling that it's the people that, you know, the people who exist outside the main culture are the people that are interested in the book, which is fine. I mean, that's kind of the people I wrote the book for. So, and I, you know, it's fine. I mean, it's just, you know, the Wall Street Journal trashed it. So I figured that was good. Well, I mean, I got like a very lukewarm review from the Wall Street Journal. They never reviewed any of my books before. I mean, there were several books that never, ever been reviewed in the Wall Street Journal. But this book, they reviewed it right away, and they said it blew. So,
well, you know, at least they're talking about you.
Do whatever you want from that. So,
yeah. At least they're talking about you, right? So,
yeah.
Wow.
You know, I spelled my name right and everything.
Well, there you go. It's been a great conversation. Again, our guest has been Mark Jacobson. Thank you for being on the show.
Anytime.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.